40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
It's a big week for the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro, which is preparing to host South America's first Olympics. Ahead of the opening ceremony on Friday at the Maracanã Stadium, Rio continues to deal with organizational problems. So says our friend in the city, Luis Piazzet. Sporty Olympic greetings, Luis.
Sporty Olympic greetings and welcome back, Sony. But I will start saying sorry. I promised to Andrew last week not to use anymore the words preparations for the Olympics. But it's still a lot to get done. Rio is not ready just yet, only 4 days away from the opening ceremony. I checked two of the four areas of competition venues, and at Copacabana, where some of the water sports, beach volleyball and a marathon will take place, there were workers finishing buildings, with trucks unloading building materials. At the very moment I passed by, I saw two typical mountain waves coming over the stretch of sand, washing the boardwalk and the Atlantic Avenue. One of the TV Media Center three-story building, made with metal tube structure on the soft sand, became seriously at risk of collapsing. In the meantime, the same tide wave destroyed the ramp at the newly rebuilt marina, where the Olympic sailing teams will launch their boats. On top of these events, two Brazilian Navy aircraft fighters crashed onto each other while on a training exercise last Wednesday near the Guanabara Bay. One was able to land, the other unfortunately fell on the sea. The pilot died and has not been found. Also, a helicopter from the federal police crashed on the patio of the office of the state Rio's governor last Friday. On the same day, the building where the Australian team is staying at the Olympic Village was evacuated due to a fire. The firemen acted immediately, and fortunately no one was reported injured. The modern light vehicle recently inaugurated on the gentrified downtown became a joke among locals. Where it will stop, nobody knows until it breaks in the middle of the journey. The general feeling can well be, what will happen next? As I was preparing this report, it came to me. A burger place where athletes eat for free in the Olympic Village was shut down due to a fault in the water supply. For a week so far, water supply has been an issue in the Olympic Village. You have water for toilets, but not for hand washing. On this last Sunday was celebrated the International Day of Orgasm, and all newspapers and magazines in Brazil explored the subject related to the Olympics, mainly asking, is sex good or not for an athlete before or after a competition? In this context, Hope Solo, goalkeeper of the USA soccer team, gave an interview to a local paper and declared, if you neglect discipline, the village can be a great distraction. Based on general habits of previous Olympic Games, the IOC distributed freely a provision of 450,000 condoms and 175,000 packets of lubricant for Rio's Olympic Village inhabitants, a projection of 45 per athlete, an average of 6 sex practices per day, according to the IOC. And I quote the IOC consensus statement, sexual harassment and abuse occur worldwide. Everyone in sport shares responsibility to identify and prevent sexual harassment abuse and to develop a culture of dignity, respect, and safety in sport. Sport organizations, in particular, are gatekeepers to safety and should demonstrate strong leadership in identifying and eradicating these practices. I am Luis Piazzi for the Sony Side of Sports in Rio de Janeiro.
Thanks, Luis. And thanks also for that welcome back. It's good to be back behind the VOA microphone here in Studio 22. Meanwhile, tourists are flocking into Rio de Janeiro ahead of the Olympics, while some top athletes have pulled out of the Rio Games, citing the Zika virus and health fears. We'll hear now from a couple of tourists who say they're not worried about contracting illness in Brazil. Cassie Bright is an Olympic fan from California.
Well, of course, we thought about it before we left, and yeah, we have friends who are also doctors, but if you think about it rationally and look at the numbers, one can get all sorts of illnesses when you're traveling, but it was on our mind, but we're not especially concerned about it now. We considered it for sure, but it didn't stop us from coming to Brazil.
Meanwhile, Zhenya is from Uzbekistan, and she traveled to Brazil from Australia, where she's a student.
Well, actually, I came from Australia, so in Australia, they told us some ways that you can protect yourself against Zika, and to use mosquito sprays and some medicine, so yeah, should be fine. I'm using it, and I don't worry about it.
In more Olympic news, Brazil's hopes of winning its first gold medal in men's football took a hit when starting goalkeeper Fernando Prass was ruled out of the Rio Games with a right elbow injury. The 38-year-old Prass missed a couple of practice sessions last week after hurting his elbow. He appeared to have recovered and was expected to play in the team's friendly match against Japan on Saturday. But Prass was ruled out after re-injuring the elbow in a pregame warm-up. The veteran goalkeeper is based in Sao Paulo with the Brazilian club Palmeiras. He's one of three permitted Olympic selections older than age 23, along with star striker Neymar and midfielder Renato Augusto. Brazil will host South Africa Thursday in its opening match in Brasilia. Remember, VOA Olympic fans, while the opening ceremony is Friday in Rio de Janeiro, the men's and women's Olympic football tournaments kick off before then. The 16-team men's competition begins on Thursday, while the 12-team women's tournament begins on Wednesday. Zimbabwe and South Africa will represent Africa in women's Olympic football. The Zimbabwean female footballers make up the majority of the country's Olympic team, as we hear now from reporter Michael Cariati in Harare.
Zimbabwe sent its biggest ever contingent to the Olympic Games with 18 athletes and 18 soccer players out to do better than in 2012. When the team returned home empty-handed. Although there are some familiar faces from the 2012 London Games and others before, there are newcomers in the form of women's marathon runner Rutendo Nyahora, archer Gavin Sunderland, equestrian Camel Kruger, sprinter Tatenda Chumba, and marathon runner Patson Lovu, who are making their maiden appearance. The chairman of the Sports and Recreation Commission, Edward Swela, says they are not setting the team any targets, but have told the athletes to go out there and do their best.
Despite the daunting tasks facing our athletes, the fact that they've qualified, they've done this country proud, and I hope that as they go out there, what is important is that they will give the competitions their best.
Seven-time medal winner Casey Coventry and Sean Gunn will hunt for medals in the swimming pool. Gavin Sunderland will compete in archery, Camille Kruger in equestrian, Michael Nicholson in shooting with Endo Pebbles, and Mitchin Thorncroft contesting in rowing. Athletics is a large contingent with four marathon runners. Wirimai Juao, Cuthbert Nyasango, who are from Harare, as well as Rutendo Nyahora, who is based in South Africa, and Padon Lovu, who is based in the USA. There are places, too, for USA-based sprinters Gabriel Mbumbure and Tatenda Chumba. However, to the ordinary Zimbabwean, the Olympic Games are about case to Coventry. A football follower, Donald Ngadzino, says although ages caught up with the queen of the pool, looking at the other members of the Zimbabwean team, she is the only one capable of bringing home a medal.
Good for Zimbabwe to be participating there, but I think only Kirsty Coventry will bring some medals here.
Sports follower Fano Daka believes Coventry is going to leave the stage with a flourish.
Kirsty Coventry has been an inspiration to a lot of swimmers. This is her last Olympic Games. She really can't go out without a medal. She has to push it to her best.
This is Coventry's last Olympic Games appearance. However, sports analyst Rizai Mandishona is skeptical, saying Zimbabwe would be lucky to come back home with even a single medal.
We will not receive a medal because the competition they are facing is very high. I don't think they will achieve a medal.
However, the athletes themselves are confident they will give up a show worth talking about for years to come. Mighty Warriors coach Shadrack Mlauzi says his team is ready for the so-called big guns of international women's football.
We've analyzed each and every opponent. All players know what we're up against, and we can certainly say we'll be up there and compete with them.
After a seventh place finish at the last games, Joao has refused to promise much, but says he will give out his best.
We have been quite well. We are hoping that if everything else well, we'll do our best as we always do. We can't promise to be first or second or number one, but what we always promise to go out there and do our best and present our country very well.
The Mighty Warriors will be the first Zimbabweans to take to the fields of play when they open up their Group F campaign against Germany on Wednesday. This is Michael Cariati.
More Olympic news. The United States is bidding for its third consecutive Olympic gold medal in men's basketball. The Americans continue their Olympic preparations later Monday night with a warm-up game against Nigeria in Houston, Texas. When these teams met in group play at the 2012 Olympics in London, the USA crushed Nigeria by 83 points, winning 156-73. I'm going to go out on a limb, VOA Olympic fans, and predict the Americans will win by a smaller margin in Houston tonight. Tadi Abeje has some fun Olympic facts about the Nigerian team. The Nigerians are playing in their second Olympics at London 2012. Nigeria finished with a record of 1 win and 4 losses in group play. Nigeria joined FIBA, the International Basketball Federation, in 1964, and the Nigerians won the gold medal at the 2015 FIBA Africa Championship. Tadi says Nigeria also has 4 players with NBA experience: Josh Akignon, Ike Diogu, Michael Binaje, and Ben Uzo, and they all say they're looking forward to playing in Rio.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. Turning to golf, American Jimmy Walker is celebrating his first ever major title after winning at the 98th PGA Championship in New Jersey. Joining us now with more details is Jonah Haskell. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The final golf major of the year wrapped up on Sunday at historic Baltusrol Golf Club in New Jersey as American Jimmy Walker won a hard-fought battle with world number one Jason Day to capture the Wanamaker Trophy. Walker had led after the first round on Thursday and stayed at the top of the leaderboard through the weekend, but had to fend off challenges from British Open champ Henrik Stenson and Jason Day in the final round. After rain on Saturday forced some players to finish the third round on Sunday morning, they then continued right on through to the fourth and final round, with barely a stop in between. Walker was one of those players who had to play through, and after he finished the third round at 11 under, the extra holes didn't seem to affect him too much in the final round, as he shot par over the front nine to stay in the lead. Day, who started the round at 10 under, looked to have blown it after making two bogeys in his first three holes of the front nine. But the Australian star got within one stroke of Walker by birdieing the fifth and ninth holes. Walker then responded by birdieing 10 and 11, as Day shot a three on the par four 11th to keep Walker within two strokes. That would be the margin between the two until Walker made a clutch putt to birdie the 17th and move into a three-stroke lead with just one hole to play. But Jason Day is ranked first in the world for a reason and managed to eagle the par 5 18th, putting the pressure on Walker, whose lead had suddenly shrunk to just one stroke. Walker, though, was calm in the face of pressure and parred the 18th to win the tournament by that one stroke, finishing at 14 under. This is Walker's first ever major win and only his sixth in his PGA career. Previously, he had never finished higher than eighth in a major, and with his win at the PGA Championship this year, the winners of every single major golf tournament this year was winning a major for the first time. English player Danny Willett won his first major at the Masters in April, followed by Dustin Johnson getting his first major win at the U.S. Open in June, and Henrik Stenson of Sweden won his first major a couple weeks ago at the British Open in Scotland. This trend is in stark contrast to last year's majors, which were dominated by big names, and when Jordan Spieth took a run at possibly sweeping all four. The first major of the 2017 PGA season will be the Masters, held in Augusta, Georgia, in April.
Thanks, Jonah. That's Jonah Haskell joining us here in Studio 22. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to have you back.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Andrew, and thank you for your hosting the past couple weeks.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's like I said, it's good to have you back. It's good to have restore order to the world. I don't know if I could keep drinking that much coffee to keep up that enthusiasm that you have. So it's good to have you back.
What's trending in the sports world, Andrew, on this Monday?
Well, the big stat from Jimmy Walker's win was, as Jonah mentioned, that the last five major winners have been first-time winners. A lot of people impressed by that. Also, a lot of people saying that it's good times for Jimmy Walker. Of course, there's an actor, Jimmy Walker, who was on the show Good Times back, I guess, in the 70s. So a lot of people making jokes about that. But a lot of focus on the Olympics, too. I want to start with the Australians. We talked about this last week with Dan Friedel, that the Australians kind of had a mixed week last week in Rio. They said they weren't going to move into the Olympic Village because the conditions were terrible. Rio's mayor said that he was going to put a kangaroo in front of their building. They kind of made up. He gave them a key to a city. They gave him a kangaroo stuffed animal as a joke. Everything seemed right with the world. Well, there was apparently a fire, a small fire in their building where the fire alarm had to be pulled. And when they were evacuating, a couple of their possessions were stolen, some Zika-protected shirts and a laptop. So the Australians are back in the news, unfortunately, having some bad luck in Rio, and people saying, well, maybe they shouldn't have moved into the Olympic Village if the security systems weren't in place or if the fire alarm systems were malfunctioning, whatever the case may be. But it's, again, sparking a lot of questions on social media about will these Olympic Village apartments be ready in time for the athletes.
Andrew, getting back to Jimmy Walker, I was telling our producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, that I watched the last couple holes in New Jersey at the 98th PGA Championship. And occasionally when Walker would tee off, you'd hear members of the gallery saying, "Dynamite," which I think is one of Jimmy Walker, the actor's favorite expressions.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we saw some of that. I saw a couple tweets that used that dynamite for Jimmy Walker. So exciting stuff for him, for sure.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, Rule 40. Now, nobody probably knows what Rule 40 is, but you've probably seen the effects of it. It's a Rule 40 of the Olympic Charter, and it prohibits unofficial Olympic sponsors from using athletes' images in any kind of advertising, and it prohibits Olympic athletes from talking about those sponsors during the Olympics in the week preceding and then through the end of the Olympics. Now, the reason why Rule 40 is getting a lot of attention this year in particular is because of the social media that we have athletes and companies using. And there's a lot of questions about, will this rule apply to social media? Could athletes or companies get in trouble if they tweet out a picture of an athlete wearing Under Armour, or if somebody, an athlete, tweets out, says, thanks to New Balance for the support as I, you know, go for the gold, are they going to get in trouble? So there's a lot of back and forth about this, especially regarding social media. And there's actually a campaign to change Rule 40 and allow athletes and the companies a little more freedom to speak openly. I saw one picture, I believe it's in Rio, of a truck that's driving around with some kind of slogans on it. And the one that says, good luck, you know who you are, at whatever you know, where, whoever you know. It's all, you know, they can't say any of the words. The idea being, the idea being that this Rule 40 is so restrictive, it prohibits the free speech of the athletes, of the sponsors. So there's a lot of buzz about that, even though it's not necessarily a sporting event. It's still impacting the athletes, impacting the companies, and impacting the Olympics.
Andrew, let me read out a couple of comments from my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. Eddie Manda writes, hello, Sunny Side of Sports. Greetings from Eastern Zambia. I know Eddie is a regular reader of my Facebook page and also a regular listener to the Voice of America. Andrew, you get a shout out from Henry Amara. I believe Henry is writing from Nigeria, but Henry says, Andrew did a great job as host. Welcome back, Sonny. So we appreciate those comments.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Henry. That's much appreciated.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, we're focused on the Olympics, and I imagine we're going to be talking about a lot of trends coming up with the Olympics, but I want to look at another international competition that occurred this weekend, and that's the beer mile.
Uh-oh.
Now, it's exactly what you think it is. It's you basically, these competitors have to run a mile, 4 laps around the track, and every lap they have to, before they set off running, chug a beer. And there's very strict regulations as to the alcohol content and the size of the beer. It has to be over 5% alcohol by volume, has to be more than 355 milliliters. So a lot of liquid that they have to drink, and they have to run around the track and do this in the second annual Beer Mile World Classic. Well, Corey Bellarmore of Canada set a new world record at this Beer Mile, 4:34. He did the mile, and he did it after chugging these beers, which is incredibly impressive. There are maybe only a few people in the world that can do that well in the mile, period, let alone chugging some beers. But it's a funny, you know, little competition, and one that's captured social media's attention. We see these things from time to time, these odd sporting events. I think there's one in maybe Scotland where they roll a wheel of cheese down a hill and people have to chase it, something like that. So another one of these competitions. But congratulations to Corey Bellarmore of Canada, the winner of the Beer Mile. I don't think any of the Olympians will be chugging beer when they're running. I think they'll
right.
probably be having more of that, you know, Gatorade or that goo stuff. I have a friend that does marathons. It's always about the goo that they eat to sustain them, the protein and carbohydrate goo. But no, just a fun little sporting event in the precursor to the Olympics.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. And we'll hear you on Tuesday, Andrew.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the August 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Keith Holmes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Population, Refugees, and Migration, Ann Richard, recently announced nearly $27 million in new humanitarian assistance to support those affected by Boko Haram violence across the Lake Chad Basin region. Assistant Secretary Richard traveled in Cameroon and Chad recently to highlight the devastating impact of Boko Haram and strengthen international cooperation to ease the desperate plight of refugees and internally displaced persons in Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Approximately 9.2 million people are suffering forced displacement, deprivation, and disease across the Lake Chad Basin region, including 155,000 refugees and 2.6 million internally displaced persons. Nearly 5 million are classified as food insecure. According to the UN, the number of displaced people has tripled over the last 2 years. Recent humanitarian assessments have found possible famine conditions in parts of Nigeria, requiring immediate aid to prevent further deterioration and death. The additional funding announced on July 13th by Assistant Secretary Richard bolsters efforts by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, to provide Nigerian refugees with essential assistance, such as access to clean water and sanitation facilities, health care, essential household items, and shelter. It also supports the UNHCR's protection efforts for internally displaced persons and refugees in the region, maintaining access to asylum and preventing forced returns, addressing issues of gender-based violence and sexual exploitation and abuse, and providing programs that protect children. U.S. funding also backs the expansion of urgently needed food assistance to reach hundreds of thousands more in northeastern Nigeria and in Niger. Contributions to the UN Humanitarian Air Service in Chad and Cameroon ensure the safe and reliable transport of aid workers and humanitarian cargo. This new funding brings the total U.S. government humanitarian assistance for the Lake Chad Basin humanitarian response in fiscal year 2015 and fiscal year 2016 to nearly $281 million. Recently coined the most underreported, the most underfunded, and the least addressed of the big crises we face by UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator Stephen O'Brien, the Lake Chad Basin crisis urgently needs a more robust response. The United States urges all nations to join in doing more to address the extraordinary level of need and to contribute generously to UN and other Lake Chad Basin humanitarian appeals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Street Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Street Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.